If you have not caught up on all the latest craze and you want to download the app, do so now when you use underdogfantasy.com/dominate. That's promo code dominate to match your deposit up to $100 dollar for dollar. All the great best ball action and the easiest to use player prop betting app that you could possibly have on the market. Again, go to Underdog Fantasy and just use the promo code dominate when you sign up today to get a match dollar for dollar up to $100 on your deposit. Thank you for supporting the show.
Operation Domination is underway. The ultimate game plan to dominate your NFL experience with your hosts, Dan Maeda.
Last but not least on Sunday
Chase
night.
Thornton.
Yeah, I mean, I got it.
Chris Dowhouse.
Get him, Chase. Get him, Chase.
And Adam LaRue.
No, not necessarily, but it's again the same.
Don't hope to win. Be great and dominate.
Back again on a Wednesday night for the third episode of Operation Domination. And it's time. It is time for our Dynasty series. We're going to be talking about rookies for the next 4 weeks until we lead up to our live NFL draft special down in Charlotte at a bar. I can't even wait to get loose with those people down there. We'll all be down there doing that. I can't wait for that. It's going to be fantastic, but we're getting you pumped up for it, talking about the rookies, talking about our fantasy expectations, talking about our analysis. It's going to be a lot of fun. Thanks for joining us live on our YouTube channel. By the way, subscribe if you have not done so already. Hit the little bell notification so you get notified whenever we have new content available to you. You can also download Operation Domination, now widely available on every major podcast platform out there. Spotify, iHeart, Apple Podcasts, you name it. So you can download us while you're on the go. I'm Dan Maeda. I'm joined here with Christy, Chase Thornton, and Adam LaRue. Fellas, how we doing?
Woo!
Doing well, not quite as well as
country. She's getting ready.
Well, to help us break this all down, because you know, us four of us. I mean, we know something. We don't know a lot. We gotta get experts in here to talk about this, okay? And we did just that to get our best expert in here. So, with no further ado, let's get him introduced. The moment you've all been waiting for. He's on the bottom left portion of your screen. A CFF and NFL fantasy creator for Player Profile, co-host of a Rookie Big Board and an FSWA member, Mr. John Long.
Thank you, gentlemen. That was very well done. Way overblown. I appreciate the hyperbole, but it's very good to be here and talk quarterbacks.
Oh, man. Thanks for taking the time, John. Always happy to have these guests on as we get into these discussions. And these are lively debate discussions, right? Where you have your rookies ranked. Everyone's got a different opinion, so I'll be loving to dive into this. Just as an overview, real quick, John, when you look at this quarterback class, what are you seeing here compared to other classes? Is this truly a top class that everyone talks about? Or do you think there's more holes than maybe people realize?
So this is my 11th year creating and ranking players, scouting them. I obviously have been watching football for 40 years, but I don't like to go back to the Andrew Luck group because I don't have anything on paper. I don't have anything published of what my thoughts were back then. In the last 11 years, I think this is the strongest, deepest class I've seen and that I've had a chance to look at. We've had a lot of groups. If you remember Winston and Mariota standing at the top of their draft class, you had Carson Wentz and Jeff the Lions quarterback. Why can't
Jared
I forget?
Goff.
Why? Jared Goff. They're at the top of that class. We have the COVID class now that looks a lot worse than we thought at the time for Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, Justin Fields, and Trey Lance. We thought that was really deep. Now we kind of shake our heads. There's really only Lawrence right now, even though I still believe in Fields. But this class, it does have three studs in my book. It has one huge upside home run hitting prospect. And then it's got two starters or two players who should be able to start from day one in the NFL just because of the absurd amount of experience they can handle calling an offense and executing it at the NFL level. And I think there's one sleeper. I mean, if we get three dynasty starters, if let's say I like seven, if we get three out of those, that class, that's incredible, folks.
Sure.
That's incredible. Yeah. I mean, out of Wentz and Goff, you got Goff. Out of Mario Winston, they're both pretty much now career backups. I mean, when you really start to look at it, if you get two starters who are really dynasty worthy, that's a good class. And I think we have a really good chance of getting three out of here. I know, I do believe we'll have two. It depends who the third one is, but we should get a third one out of it.
All right. Well, love it. We're going to dive all into it. I'm just speaking of number ones, let's stick with you quick, real quick, John, because where's Caleb Williams, who's everybody's, I think, consensus number one at this point? Where does he stack up to those other previous number ones? What is your take on him heading to Chicago most likely?
So right now, if I look at I have my model of the top prospects from 2014 to 23 at the quarterbacks. I don't slot in this year's class till the draft is over and I have a little more time to reflect. But I'll just give you a hint. Watson, Lawrence, Mahomes are my top three of the last 11 years in my model and my scouting report. Stroud, Burrow are fourth and fifth. I personally, if you ask me right now, Mayfield, Tagovailoa, and Kyler Murray are the next three. I believe Caleb Williams is a better prospect than Mayfield, Tagovailoa, and Kyler Murray. So I would have him right now, if you ask me, at number six in the last decade.
Okay, that's incredibly fair. The name's right in front of him. Like you said, Burrow, Stroud, Mahomes, those guys. Yeah, that's great company to have. And I agree with you. He's definitely, in my book at least, a step tier above the Tua Tagovailoas, the Baker Mayfields and such. So I like that. I like that quite a bit over the last few years. Adam, buddy, you talk about Caleb. You know, I think he might be suffering to some degree, similar to how Marvin Harrison is, where people are looking for reasons to break him down rather than build him up because he's been such a consensus number one for so long to this time. What would you say to that? Are there red flags to you with Caleb Williams, or are they minimal in your mind compared to what he can do?
No, I would tend to agree. I think that there is a lot more getting almost too into the weeds in his game. Look, for example, I think the biggest example of this is the narrative about searching for the big plays and always going for the big plays. And actually, in my opinion, one of his strengths is on underneath on the routine throws, that he's always putting guys in position to make the yards after the catch. He's always giving guys room to keep their momentum, keep going forward. And that's just like a small thing. But I love that he's doing it, and I didn't really see it to that level with anyone else in this class. And he only really seems to get credit for rolling out of the pocket and slinging it deep, or the creative stuff that he's doing. That's just what comes to mind for me initially, as far as one of the things that people are overlooking with him. But I tend to agree that people are just he's been the one for too long.
Yeah, it boggles my mind. It tends to happen, and people just, they need something to come up and talk about. Chase, let's talk about your favorite team. Oh, I'm sorry, that's right, your rival team. Let's talk about what his situation is with Chicago, because in his case, he's probably the only prospect that we know for sure where his landing spot is going to be. So when you look at Chicago, what they've done this offseason, how does that work around Caleb Williams and his fantasy value for anybody who has a 101 in a Superflex Dynasty League right now?
Oh, yeah, no, I've said it in the last couple of weeks. I'll say it again. I really like what Chicago is doing in terms of trying to surround him with talent. They're doing and actually pulling off what Carolina, I think, thought they were doing last year with Bryce Young, trying to bring in guys around him that would be experienced and could actually play some football for him. He's stepping into a much better situation than Justin Fields ever was stepping into in terms of a core. In fact, he's stepping into a better situation than just about any Chicago quarterback in history has stepped into. Let's be honest here. He's going to have DJ Moore and Keenan Allen to throw to on the outsides. I mean, two of the most dynamic receivers fantasy or otherwise, that we, you know, that we've seen here in the last 10 years or so. He's going to have Cole Kmet, a nice young up and, you know, up and coming tight end that can grow with him. They stacked their backfield now between Roschon Johnson, DeAndre Swift. They still have Khalil Herbert around there if he sticks around. They've really done a good job of surrounding him with talent. They've done a good job of trying to build up their offensive line, which just 2-3 years ago was a major weakness. They were one of the worst offensive lines in the game just a couple of years ago. I really like the way that they've done that. Plus, they're strong on defense, so you know that he's not necessarily going to have to go out there all the time and score 35 points to try and win some football games. I think they've done a good job of trying to set themselves up to take that young quarterback. Didn't necessarily think they needed to get rid of Justin Fields. I didn't know that they needed to go, you know, with a quarterback at one, but Caleb Williams is going to be able to step in right away and have every opportunity to score fantasy points to win football games for that team. I'm very excited about him as in the first 2-3 picks, especially in a super draft league, super flex league, where you have to be strong at quarterback. You need to be 3 deep, 4 deep, 5 deep. If you can, you need to monopolize that position. Go and get him because he's going to be the best set up of the guys that are going to be drafted that have a possibility of starting. He's going to have by far, I think, the best situation around him.
There's a few amazing things of what just happened there with Chase's diatribe. First of all, he just said Chicago did a good job of setting up a quarterback. That's number one. Number two, it's coming from a Packers fan. I was complimenting the Chicago Bears. Just a couple of amazing things.
Give credit where it's due. They've actually, you know, they haven't fumbled this one yet.
Chris, who do you comp Caleb Williams to in your mind, in your estimation?
I think his upside, even though it looks like an Aaron Rodgers to me, he talked about hunting the, you know, Adam talked about hitting him in stride and hunting for the big play. If there's come to knocks that, you know, could be on that, we've heard about that with Aaron Rodgers. Sometimes he likes to hunt for the big play. Sometimes he makes things happen with his feet, tries to buy time to get the guys down the field. But I think overall, Caleb Williams has a lot of Aaron Rodgers in him. You see a guy who can sling off, you know, back foot. He can make the different angle throws. He's able to throw a nice fade. He's able to kind of, you know, create, like I said earlier. So for me, that's the kind of guy. I heard a lot of Patrick Mahomes comparisons. Let's stop with all that. Patrick Mahomes had a cannon. Caleb Williams has a good arm. So I think, to me, Aaron Rodgers is the comp I'd go with.
I like that's exactly the comp I have too. So we're in complete agreement here. And really, the only thing I'm going to add to this conversation, gentlemen, is that I think, especially for those who are out there trying to make a critique, that always trying to make the big play, Adam, you alluded to that. Can we give this man credit where credit is due as well? Because his junior year, where he had one first round caliber NFL type wide receiver, right, in Jordan Addison, not much else outside of that. USC's not been a very talented team over the past couple of seasons. He only had one. He goes for 42 touchdowns and 4,500 yards. Last year, 2023, yes, he's got Brendan Rice, who maybe goes day two. I think that's a bit of a question mark. I don't think it should be, but I think it is a bit of a question mark right now when you're trying to evaluate where these guys are going to go. And outside of that, you have maybe Marshawn Lloyd is a late day two, early day three pick, terrible offensive line, terrible defense, putting in shootout situations all the time. The guy had to be Superman for USC to do anything. Can we give some credit where credit is due? It's all
93 touchdowns in 3 years as a starter to 14 interceptions. The guy averages 30-5, averages 30-5 though. And his completion percentage got better all 3 years he was a starter. And you're going to nitpick him because he likes to go out there and try and, you know, yeah, make a play every once in a while.
Where's the line? Does the supporting cast matter? Does the supporting cast not matter? There's a quarterback we're going to talk about later who had one hell of a supporting cast, and he's living off the dividends of that. But with the other guys, like another guy we're about to mention here in Drake May, doesn't have a great supporting cast his final year, and all of a sudden we have everybody looking for Crow. Speaking of Drake May, let's move on. Go ahead, Chris.
I was going to say real quick, Dan, also, you know, USC's defense was terrible. So there's a reason Caleb Williams was hunting for that big play.
Right.
Yeah.
He had to keep scoring every game.
This is where context matters and understanding what you're watching. USC's defense was historically awful. What does that do? That puts your young stud quarterback, he has to play hero ball. Why he tried to go big play? They're down by 10, third quarter. He doesn't want to give up on the season. They still had Pac-10 hopes when they were like, you know, were they 6-2? And they had games with Oregon and Washington. Now they got whacked, both of them. And we saw how good Oregon and Washington was, but he played hero ball. Look, you've got to watch. This is just my opinion. You've got to watch both years of tape. You've got to see what he looked like in 2022 when the Trojans played for the Pac-10 championship. Now they got destroyed by Utah. And then Lincoln Riley did him no favors with one of the worst defenses of all time. The receiving core fell apart, and the offensive line was not very good. So there are some reasons why people have these criticisms, which I take them loosely when I put it into context.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And I think Drake Bay, who's been mostly the consensus number two, was in a very similar situation. John, two questions on that, though. Is Drake May your number two? And then with him, what do you take out of Drake May?
Drake May is my number two. And I think when I do rankings, I have my model. I have my film study. They both matter to me. And then and this is somewhat subjective, and I'll admit that, but you have to project. And I learned this from my mistake with Josh Allen. The model did not like Josh Allen. I was worried about playing at the group of five, playing Wyoming. He had a really bad senior season after a really good. If you watch Josh Allen, his junior season, similar to Caleb's, his junior season was really impressive. And then he came back and you're like, I don't know. So I think I had him number four in the rankings. And if you told me he was going to be the top two quarterbacks, I would say, I don't think so. I was in the realm of possibilities. So what did that teach me? I have to project what a young player could look like with competent coaching in a good offensive scheme that highlights his skill set. What I see with Drake May on film is a prototypical NFL pocket thrower, yet he has the ability with his legs to gain first downs, which is invaluable now in today's NFL. The linebackers are too fast. The defensive linemen are too fast. The game is fast. You've got to pick up two or three first downs as a quarterback with your legs. I mean, how many times have we seen it with Mahomes and Allen and Jalen Hurts, 3rd and 8, and they get 12 yards, right? And that changes everything, literally. Drake May, I don't think people give him enough athletic credit. First of all, he had 1,209 yards rushing, basically in two seasons. Remember, he sat behind Sam Howell. So you have a quarterback with 1,200 rushing yards. His rushing equity 2 years ago, and I take the highest number. What I mean by that, the percentage of rushing yards he had on the team. He had 32% of the Tar Heels rushing yards 2 years ago. That's insanity. Now, where context matters, they lost Josh Downs, the wide receiver. But more importantly, what they had in North Carolina was the rise of Amarian Hampton, a true stud running back. He's about, if my memory serves me, he's 6 feet, 224 pounds. He just absolutely destroyed opponents. I think he had over 1,500 yards rushing and some silly like 20 touchdowns. Drake May and the coaching staff realized we got to get the ball into Hampton's hands. When you have a light box, guess what North Carolina did? Give the ball to Hampton. When they were in the fourth quarter, what did they give? Give the ball to Hampton. Now, we all know, who do you want to get hit at the goal line? Your 225-pound running back or your 223-pound quarterback? When you have a stud, so his numbers don't look as good, they didn't have a great receiver this year. I mean, you're going to go talk about wide receivers. DeVontez Walker didn't play the first four games. You'll discuss all that. Brian Nesbitt, the tight end, he went back to the league. He's all right. He's an interesting Devy prospect, but he's not a game-breaking tight end yet at the college level. What I like about Drake May, you project him with rational coaching, a good scheme that uses his arm deep. He has a good deep ball. You allow him to run when he needs to. You might even do a few designed runs on third and two or, you know, goal line, depending on who your backs are. The young man has played 26 games. I think he would benefit from a year on the bench, but I don't think that's going to happen. I think they're going to throw him right away. I do think he could spend that Patrick Mahomes, Carson Palmer, basically Jalen Hurts season on the bench, but I think he's going to play. What I see is a big, strong young man who can take the pounding. And I'll say this. I was never a Daniel Jones guy. I was very low on Daniel Jones and Mitch Trubisky. Drake May is everything that people thought Mitch Trubisky and Daniel Jones were. I was very low on Jones and very low on Trubisky. I had Trubisky behind Watson and Mahomes, which obviously worked out. And I thought the Giants were insane for taking Daniels. But I like Drake May. He's better than those two prospects.
Loved everything you just broke down there. Couldn't agree with it more. I'm just going to bolster your point with this. I love quarterbacks who can go deep and also not turn over the ball. 12th in turnover worthy rate and second in deep passing yards in 2023. So I just want to bolster with that because here's the question. You kind of laid it out. Projecting him with a competent coaching staff, with a competent offense. Now, after Caleb Williams, we don't know exactly where these guys are going to go necessarily. So, Adam, I'm going to ask you this question. Drake May, let's say the NFL doesn't suffer from complete insanity and he actually goes number two to the Washington Commanders. Or should I say the Washington Commanders don't suffer complete insanity because we know that can happen at any given moment, even with the new ownership, apparently. What would your estimation be if he does go there, works with Cliff Kingsbury, and the weapons they have in place?
I think it'd be great because I think they've got receivers who can win deep, and that's exactly what he needs. I mean, it would be a system that's going to throw the ball quite a bit, and he's got receivers that can win deep. They'd need to figure out things in the offensive line a little bit better. I mean, we saw how beat up, speaking of North Carolina quarterback, Sam Howell was last year, so there's clearly work to be done, and certainly part of that was on Sam Howell, but part of it was on the offensive line. And they would need to improve there. But outside of that, man, like, skill position is set up really well for him to thrive. I mean, he's worked with the Bruiser before. I think he can do it with what they have in the backfield now.
Don't forget Austin Eckler on third.
Yeah, they just signed Austin Eckler too. That's going to be huge for whoever is there.
Right. So I think he would be in a good position as long as they can kind of figure out an offensive line that's not going to get him killed. Although I liked his pocket presence, so I think he can handle it to a degree.
He's better than Sam Howell in the pocket.
Much better than Sam Howell, but that's not the craziest bar.
To the point that John was making, to the point that John made about him sitting for a year, though, that would be my point. If he goes to Washington, I would hope they could find some way to sit him for a year or two.
That wouldn't happen.
But that's my point, though, is that I think he could really benefit from a year of solid quarterback coaching and a year of solid just learning and not having to get thrown to the fire, especially like Adam just said, behind that offensive line, it's one of the worst in the whole game. I mean, they've got a ton of weapons for him, but he's kind of got a little bit of a big looping. I mean, when you're 6'4" and your arm's longer than I am tall, you're going to have a little bit longer release. I get that, but he doesn't throw like a catcher. He throws like a pitcher, right? And it takes a while, and his footwork isn't always all that consistent, and it kind of wonks him up in the pocket a little bit sometimes. And if he's always under pressure, learning the game at the pro speed like that, I'm worried about him. I'm worried about his development in year one. I wish he could go somewhere where he could sit for a year or two, get that Jordan Love treatment, maybe not have to wait that long, but then be able to be ready to play the pro game when he steps onto the field and not have to be learning on the fly.
See, I think Drake May is ready to go. But Chris, I want to get to your thoughts here on Drake May.
Yeah, I think he's ready to go, Dan. I hear you what you're saying, Chase, and I think there's some concerns about, you know, does he have enough starts? What you saw last year, is that something's going to carry over? I saw a guy, when we talked about with John, you know, had no offensive line, has Mac Brown as a head coach who loves to run the ball if he gets a choice, had no real receivers for most of the season to throw to. When he got his best receiver back, his statistics definitely jumped, especially when his receiver got in shape. So you saw that correlation when he had a target he could actually use. He was very effective. He makes good checks to the line. I think he understands the game. I think he's a gym rat. You know, Johnny talked a lot about Josh Allen, and I think for myself and Adam, I talked about this before about quarterbacks. It's not only about projecting their talent. Sometimes guys love to do that. It's projecting the work ethic. How hungry is this guy? How much work are you going to put? Josh Allen put a hell of a lot of work into his footwork.
Yes, he did.
A hell of a lot of work into all the things that he's done. A lot of quarterbacks come off like, I have a cannon, I have a good arm, and you don't see the kind of same progression and the same work at it. I think when you have a guy who's the son of a coach, has a history of other players in his family being athletes, I think this guy's going to try to be, you know, a stud out there. So I don't worry about him kind of getting an adverse, you know, situation in Washington. I think that's a perfect situation. Now, New England, then I'd like to see him sit for a year because they have no talent around him. But in Washington, you got Terry McLaurin, who has, you know, kills you in deep crossers. You have Dotson who can get down the field and get stretch it. And then you have, you know, a decent offensive line. It's not atrocious compared to some of the things that we see out there. They have some improvement for a tackle, but they can maybe do something with that in the draft. So overall, this Washington offense does have some talent. And I think Drake May might be in a good situation if he winds up there.
They also brought in Zach Ertz, and Cliff Kingsbury will actually use Zach Ertz. He's the one who brought him into Arizona down there.
No, so, I don't care about Zach Ertz, Mr. Catch Ball 4 yards.
You need a tight end. You need a tight end, and you need that outlet. He's going to need that outlet. He's going to have Eckler and Ertz. I like that. I like that for outlets.
No, I get what you're saying there. Chris, you kind of just brought the point, that last point I'm going to make on the Drake May discussion, which is, what if it is New England, right? Because he has the deep ball acumen that we all like to see for fantasy points. He has the rushing over 1,200 yards, and I know he had 16 touchdowns combined over the last two seasons rushing over there in North Carolina. So he can get it done with your legs. He can get it done through the air. That is the perfect combination of what we're looking for from a fantasy standpoint, which is why he's hands down my number two quarterback. And I think from a fantasy standpoint, it's almost a 1A, 1B situation in my estimation with him and Caleb Williams if he winds up in Washington, where they already have weapons. Anybody who goes to New England, I don't care who you are, I'm sorry, you're probably going to be moving down my board a little bit in those rookie drafts. Even you, Drake May, might fall to number three, maybe even number four, because you want to talk a team that is not set up for anybody to succeed right away. It's Scott Van Pelt as the OC, who we know he just likes to run the ball first. I have never in my life seen him develop a quarterback ever. You have Kendrick Bourne's your big signing. Juju Smith-Schuster's still on the roster. You're hoping you're getting something out of Pop Douglas over the slot, I guess. Your big acquisition this season was Antonio Gibson.
It's just KJ Osborne.
And KJ Osborne, yeah. This is just a team that's just not set up for anybody to succeed. So I hope for every quarterback in this class's sake that the Patriots do Patriots things and they trade back. And that's why landing spot is going to be so important. And that's why I will reiterate this, and I'll reiterate this throughout our Dynasty series. Make sure you're drafting your rookie drafts after the frickin' drafts. Do yourself a favor. All right, so let's move into the consensus number three, Jaden Daniels. I'm not going to talk about Jaden Daniels. I have a rant coming up after this, so I'm going to talk about a couple of him and somebody else. So I'm going to omit myself from this conversation. I'm going to skip right over to John. John, when you watch Jaden Daniels on tape, what do you see?
The first thing that always have come to my mind is uber athletic. I mean, this man, he makes things happen on the field that are unbelievable. And I'm not trying to say that he commands the offense. He does. But man, he has that Lamar Jackson twitch, that Randall Cunningham twitch, that Michael Vick. Just, they're just things that he does on the field. Like, if you check out some of his like 50-yard touchdown runs or 40-yard runs at LSU, there's just some stuff. I mean, literally, I watched probably 8 games of the LSU Tigers live. And there are moments where I literally am shaking my head. Like, it was the same feeling I had of Michael Vick when he played at Virginia Tech. When I saw Michael Vick at Virginia Tech, I had never seen anything like that. There was never, because we didn't see Randall Cunningham at UNLV. And if anyone tells you they did, they're probably lying. Because there wasn't 8 games on ESPN. There wasn't, you know, FS1 and Fox Sports.
It was a basketball school, though. I
saw him. Right, no one saw him at UNLV. He must have been incredible. I mean, it must have really been ridiculous playing at UNLV at that time. So I put him in this very incredible pantheon of these athletic, electric quarterbacks. I think his long arm is unbelievable. I think he throws a deep ball as well as anyone I've ever seen on the move and from the pocket. I question his intermediate game. I think it's good enough, but he's not incredible from that 10 to 20 yard crosser with someone in his face. He's got a good short game. He can dump the ball off. He can throw the quick screens and all those types of passes. The question is, why is he holding the ball on too long, and does he bail too quickly? That's going to be the challenge of the NFL offense coordinator, quarterback coach, head coach. I think he can develop, because what I say, how I look at it, watch his tape from freshman year at Arizona State with the immortal Herm Edwards. Watch what he did when he collapsed in 2021 at Arizona State. Then watch what he has developed into at LSU. Granted, I understand he had the wide receivers are silly. I mean, you guys are going to wax poetically about Neighbors and Brian Thomas. He also, I'm not a Brian Kelly guy. Let me tell you, I don't like the person, but he does coach offense well. So why I'm saying all this, Daniels took the coaching, and Chris mentioned it, with Josh Allen. You read about Jay Daniels going into these film rooms, and he had some electronic game, right? And they were putting headsets on him, and he was doing this incredible amount of work down at LSU in order to make his processing faster. I guess they put him on like an electronic clock with visuals, and he had to make a decision who to throw the ball to. The work ethic's there. The talent's there. And what I really like, he has had 55 games of college starting experience. I'm a big believer that experience matters. Now, maybe it's because I'm an old man and I'm a curmudgeon, but I've seen too many quarterbacks, and there's going to be two that I will pinpoint directly here. I have no shares of Trey Lance. And you know why? He played like 14 games of college. That was absurd. Two, I had a ton of shares of Jalen Hurts. Why? He played ridiculous amounts of games between Alabama and Oklahoma. Let me get the exact number. Jalen Hurts had played 56 college games when he came out. That matters. And here's what I've thought a lot about in the last 2 years. You know why Brock Purdy is good? It is the system and the coaching staff and the people around him. But let's give Purdy credit. He played a crap load of football at Iowa State, and he could handle an offense. And what I mean by that, getting in and out of the huddle, learning something. When the coach brings you, you know, they got the iPads or whatever they got, right? The tablets. He can look at the tablet. He can see the defense. He can process the information, and he can go out there quickly and adjust the next time he has the ball. And you know where that comes from? Experience. Brock Purdy succeeded because he had enough experience to divest the playbook and how to play offense. I'm convinced of it. Experience matters. Jaden Daniels. Now I'm going to cut off Dan. Please don't drop him in New England. Oh my God, it is a disaster. If they put Jaden Daniels in New England, he literally will go out there with worse receivers than he had in college. And that is just a disaster written all over it.
Yeah, New England is the black hole for anybody out there. That's 100%. That's a black hole. Just a black hole. Adam, looking at Jaden Daniels, what do you think, man?
I got to admit, I like him as well. I went in just admitting it, knowing my personal biases, that I didn't think he was going to be my favorite prospect. Look, he's thin, he's frail. And in my first initial glance, he reminded me a lot of Mariota in both good and bad ways. But as I got through it a little bit more, I think there is a different level of athleticism. I'm not willing to make my way all the way out to Lamar Jackson or to Michael Vick, but where I am willing to meet you is, I think he's got Kyler's quickness and maybe a little bit more speed to him. I think he really excels with the quickness, kind of the micro shifting. He can make guys miss that way. And that's what I really liked. And look, I think he does the routine things really well. And while I didn't always love his creativity as a passer, the same way we talk about Drake May and the same way we talk about Caleb Williams, I don't know how much that's going to matter for him, because what I think he does is he doesn't make he's not the best decision maker in the world. He could still use being a quicker decision maker, but he doesn't make the nuclear bad decisions. He throughout his entire career, outside of the 1 year at Arizona State, he's kept the ball away from the defense. And that's something you have to give him the entire time.
Look at his touchdown interception ratio, 89 yeah, so, to 20.
He's great there. He's had to develop 44. In other areas, but that's one he's always had. So
he was
when things go wrong, he resorts to the legs, and you got to give him that. And the legs are good enough for you to get away with doing that. And I agree. I think the intermediate game could use some work. I think he could potentially go to be a more creative passer deep. I think when he just sticks in the pocket and throws it deep, he's got a very accurate ball. He's not always looking to use it all the time when you would kind of like for him to use a little bit more. But I think he's very capable. I was impressed with him, I'll be honest.
Okay. So Chase, when you're looking at him amongst the fantasy quarterbacks, you're going into your rookie drafts, you're thinking to yourself, you know, obviously we don't know landing spot yet, but you look at the upside of Daniels, who can run and throw with Caleb, with Drake, both have mobility, not on a Jaden Daniels level. Where's your top three there between those three? Where would you have him ranked at?
I have Jaden number two for fantasy purposes here, right here, because I love the fact that he can run. I mean, Jaden Daniels, listen, regardless of the position, if Jaden Daniels was a cornerback, if Jaden Daniels was a wide receiver, if Jaden Daniels was a safety, he would still be considered an elite athlete. This dude they don't come like him. They don't run like him. I watch Big Ten football, so he looks like he's running at warp speed no matter what. But, I mean, like John said, go watch some of these runs where he takes off and no one touches him. No one touches him past the logo. It's ridiculous. I was surprised, kind of like Adam was, how much I liked him in the pocket. He's a very comfortable pocket passer, and I love that. And his deep ball is beautiful when he can just stand there and toss it all day long. And yes, he had the right guys to be able to throw that to. He had a bunch of All-American wide receivers. Let's be honest, but they weren't all like super strict route runners or anything like that. I mean, they were just good enough. They were better than a lot of the people they played against, so they didn't have to worry about that. He gets to the league where dudes are hitting their spots. He's going to be something. He's a little spindly. He's 6'4". He's 210. But you know what? There are only like three quarterbacks in this whole draft class. One of them we already talked about, Drake May. One of them we'll talk about, I think, a little bit later because one of you guys likes him. Nobody in this class is really prototypical quarterback size except for Drake May. And Jaden Daniels is 6'4". He's 210, but if he could put some weight on, he has that 6'4". He has that 6'4 height. You can't put the height on. He could put a few more pounds on. And I think he got better as the year went on about trying to protect himself and not take so many of those big hits. I really, really like Jaden Daniels from a dynasty standpoint. I will be thrilled to get him with the 1-2 if it falls. I have 21 dynasty teams, and they're all super flex. If he falls to me at anywhere in the first round past 1-1, I will jump on him like that because I love that upside. I think he's what everybody wanted to get with Anthony Richardson last year. I think he's a much better passer than Anthony Richardson because, like John just said, he's played a crap ton of football.
He's a better passer than Anthony Richardson. In my grading, he's a better passer.
Oh, big time. I don't think you can realistically argue that and be credible. But I think that he has got the sky is the limit for this dude, no matter where he goes.
All right, Chris, let me get your thoughts on what everyone's saying here about Jaden Daniels.
Well, I don't want to go too far because I know you have a rant waiting for us, Dan, to kind of explain some of the things that I won't necessarily touch upon. But, you know, just to kind of counter some of the things that Chase does. Look, I am not a Jaden Daniels fan like everybody else seems to be as much. I do think he's a first rounder. I do think he's got talent. Similar to Adam, I had more of a bias going in where I watched him at Arizona State. I was not very excited. Nobody was excited going into this year. Nobody thought Jaden Daniels was going to be shit this year going into the season. So that's part of the reason I did have some trepidation. I did see a guy who was very athletic. I see a guy who could throw the ball. I don't see the athlete of Michael Vick. I'm sorry. I don't see that. I don't see Lamar Jackson. I don't see the same quickness. I do see this. I see the running ability of a guy who can long strider. Randall Cunningham's not a bad, you know, kind of comparison. Randall's a lot more flexible, in my opinion. And I saw a guy who could take a hit. What I have general concerns about is Jaden Daniels doesn't necessarily know how to slide, doesn't necessarily know how to not take a hit. If he's going to rely on his legs, we thought Anthony Richardson was a bit like a tank, already get banged out by what, 2 or 3 games he played quarterback and he was already out of the season. So I think overall, I am concerned about a guy, you know, I'm going to spend a top 5 pick on or passing on to Drake May for. I think it would be ridiculous. I do think he has some upside, but he's also a little older. We keep, you know, talking, knocking some other guys we'll talk about later on about their age. This guy is only 7 months older than, or he's someone younger than some of those guys. So I do think having the receivers he had definitely helped. He didn't have the same statistical year, even close to that rest of his career. So you do see the major jump last year. And I do think Jaden Daniels is a guy that I do think is concerned. He needs to be in a good situation and needs to have a good offensive line to kind of protect him because I don't think he can process very quickly. He does kind of tuck and run, but as I alluded to, he keeps doing that. He might get his head knocked off. For me, Danny's a little bit higher between Mariota is a great comp. I had Adam actually statistically looking at the kind of things I saw and Tyrod Taylor. I think he's with a good deep ball, has a good stride, can make some things happen, but I don't necessarily think he's a superstar quarterback.
What's the big idea?
All right. It's time for me to sound off a little bit and then we can get back into it. Look, this isn't going, I'm going to preface this. This isn't a conversation that I'm saying Daniel sucks. This is a conversation I'm saying there needs to be a conversation. I am tired of people telling me left and right that there is a set top 3 and no one else belongs in it. And in fact, the whole debate only begins at quarterback 4 and people are talking about JD McCarthy, which that needs to be a whole other rant that I have to get to later on. That has to be a whole separate thing right there. The fact that Michael Penix isn't the conversation for third best quarterback, and this isn't just from an NFL draft standpoint. This is also from a fantasy standpoint. We have 2 years of great production out of Michael Penix compared to 1 out of Jaden Daniels. Both guys, by the way, who have played a ton of college. Yes, Michael Penix is 24. Jaden Daniels only 6 months younger at 23. And by the way, Daniels 1 year, it wasn't like he was just gifted Brian Kelly. It wasn't just gifted Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas. He had both those guys, that coach and Kayshawn Booty in his junior year, and he didn't do jack squat. So was it that he all of a sudden got good, or was it that he's 23 and now playing a man amongst boys in a falling SEC ultimately? Here's another thing that's making me go crazy. All these people are talking out of two phases of their mouth, right? Because you have the people who love Jaden Daniels, but then also harp on the fact that the pressure, specifically pressure to sack ratio, but handling pressure in general is one of the biggest correlations you could possibly have to having success as a quarterback at the NFL level. And yet Jaden Daniels in this department is the worst one of these top 6 quarterbacks when it comes to pressure to sack ratio, just 20.2% just in 2023. So he doesn't handle pressure well. He holds onto the ball too long. He is a one read and bail type of quarterback. Meanwhile, the guy that we're all shunning, the guy that we're talking about falling into the second round, is not part of the top 3, not maybe not even part of the top 4 conversation now, if you listen to a lot of media out there, Michael Penix, who's by far the best quarterback of this class when it comes to handling pressure, 8% sack to ratio in 2023, and second best time to throw amongst the top 6 quarterbacks. He does make good decisions. He does have answers. He's had 2 years of great production. From a fantasy standpoint, yes. Jaden Daniels' mobility, he has the ability to throw the ball deep, and he's got the ability to run. So yes, from a fantasy standpoint, he should be exciting. I get it. But the other problem, especially we're talking about dynasty, is long-term. And what I don't like when I see on film is a guy who consistently doesn't get out the boundary, doesn't slide, and uses his thin, small frame to take on big linebackers and safeties for absolutely no reason whatsoever. The amount of hard hits I saw this guy take made me actually cringe, physically cringe, while watching the tape here. And if you want to tell me you believe he actually is, his playing weight is 210, that he weighed in at the combine, then I'm going to say you must be the same person who actually believes Bryce Young's 204 when he's playing in week 1. Because I'm here to tell you, no college in their right mind makes their guy in their measurements when you're going in the pregame weigh 25 less pounds than what he actually is when he's playing. LSU lists him at 185. You're telling me he's 210 when he goes to play a game? Please, give me a break. Okay, so I'm not buying that. And now, yes, you want to tell me Michael Penix, he had the ACL history. That's 2 years removed now. And you're talking about a guy who's a pure pocket passer. So at least his risk is minimalized in his style of play, unlike Jaden Daniels, who I frankly don't believe is long for this league if he continues the way he was playing before. So that's why, for me, Michael Penn is not just my number three NFL prospect, but he's also my number three dynasty prospect,
too. What's the big idea?
I feel better.
Well done, sir.
I feel much better. So that's kind of our segue into Michael Penix.
So, hands pissed.
Just make the conversation. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying Daniel, like I said, not saying Daniel sucks. Not saying he doesn't belong in the first round. Absolutely does.
I'm not disagreeing.
More of a conversation. But John, talking about Michael Penix, what is he like? What is your analysis on him?
So I don't know if this is bizarre, but I think I'm now below consensus. I have him at number six, and he seems to be stealing up rankings from what, you know, and this is just from the X-verse. We'll find out when the draft the teams really think about him at the end.
Right.
And the irony here is that I was a Michael Penix guy over the summer, and someone had asked me way back in January, why is Penix lower? And I said, you know, it's not that Penix has played poorly, because he didn't. It was the other guys just catapulted ahead of him. I think Penix was as good in 2022 as he was in 2023. He had two incredible back-to-back seasons at Washington. Also, fantasy, I do count rushing. Michael Penix doesn't give you almost any rushing upside. I mean, he has 265 career rushing yards essentially in five seasons. That's 46 games started. His highest rushing equity was 5%. And I think that was with Indiana. That was not with Washington, because the knees have changed. There's no question. I mean, Daniels has this weird, beautiful, arcing kind of deep ball. Mike Penix just has this deep outside the hash marks, 40 yards down the field. It's a bullet. And I've been saying this with Felix Sharp of Campus to Canton for 3 years now. He throws that ball 35 yards outside the hash mark as well as anyone. But we were also just talking about how dominant the LSU receivers are. We can't take out the context. He had three NFL wide receivers. Michael Penix's wide receivers with Odunze, with Jalen Polk, and with Jalen McMillan, that's incredible. Kalen DeBoer's system is quarterback beautiful. I mean, DeBoer's won at every level he's ever played at. I think he won three championships at the NAIA. He's won, you know, conference titles all over the place. He got Alabama to the champion, or Washington the championship game against Michigan. Unbelievable football coach. I am a little concerned because, I mean, obviously I'm a Michigan fan. You can tell behind me. But I did say there was one thing that I thought you could do to Penix, and that was hit him in the mouth, and hit him in the mouth hard. And I knew Michigan was going to do that because Jim Harbaugh did it to Eli Manning. And I'm telling you, the greatest beating I've ever seen, go to the NFC Championship game between the 49ers and the Giants. Eli Manning took a beating that no human being should ever take in their lifetime. That was the most courageous quarterbacking I've ever seen, because Jim Harbaugh just unleashed the dogs against Manning. And you know what? Manning took it all day long. One of the best games I've ever seen by a quarterback. I knew he was going to hit Penix. I knew it. It just – Harbaugh is very simple. I don't understand. P.S., if you're taking Herbert – if you have Herbert, take him now. He ain't going to throw 35 touchdowns in a Harbaugh system. Stop dreaming, folks. Just get over it. There's 35 years of data with Harbaugh. None of it illustrates a high passing game. He's going to change like the Wizard of Oz, go ahead. Anyways, I do believe Penix can get flustered if you hit him. Now, we can say that about a lot of quarterbacks, but he doesn't give you the escapability to get out of it. We do know that rookie quarterbacks are going to get rushed by veteran defensive coordinators. They're going to send the house on third and nine. That playbook has been around since Sid Luckman was in Chicago. Young quarterback, you send the goddamn house. The problem is Penix can't escape it. He does have a slip and slide of the Dan Marino, Dan Fouts in the pocket. He's excellent at maneuvering within the pocket. But the game is so different nowadays. You can't just maneuver in the pocket. Sometimes you have to jump 5 yards outside the pocket or take the lane and sprint upfield 10 yards. His arm strength is incredible. He's a leader of men. He could coordinate a passing game. I think I have a second round grade. Dan, I do worry about the knees, but you are right. They are 2 years in the rearview mirror. So that is good news. I'll say this with the knees. I haven't seen the medical reports. I don't get to go to the combine. If he falls outside of the second round, the knees are bad. That means the medical reports are bad.
Yep.
If he goes where I think late first, early second, the knees should be, the doctors have at least given him a 4 or 5 year bill of health. So I have to do, based on the lack of rushing upside, I have moved him down to number 6.
Here's all I'm going to say then, and we'll get to Adam and everybody else with their thoughts about Michael Penix, is that I feel like I'm having the same conversation I had with people last year when I was one of the very few talking about I'd rather have CJ Stroud in fantasy football than Anthony Richardson, because I'd rather have the better quarterback whose style of play could last longer than a guy who, yes, he's going to be great when he's on the field and probably will average more fantasy points when he's on the field, but that is going to be the question mark and not as good of a passer. So that's where I'm kind of equating it to in my book, just to retort that. But I got to get to the rest of these guys here. Adam, Michael Penix, what are you seeing? Where do you think he should go?
I got a slight up on the grade from what John just said. I would have him firmly in the late first round. I do think I don't have him in the group of three. I think he is a tier down. I think he's the next of that tier. He's my QB4. But I would wait on him until the teens personally. That's where for me he lands. Similar to what you said, I love the arm. That was like the thing that was most impressive to me, because my initial, I'm from the state of Indiana, so that's my familiarity with him. And he was a completely different quarterback at that time. It's so funny that we're talking about Jaden Daniels and him, because they're both completely different quarterbacks today than they were at their previous schools.
Right.
So this is the conversation I do think is a little ironic in that respect. But he does. He does win really well with his passes down the field. I think he does really well kind of, you know, in the more routine passes as well. The mobility, it sucks because I think he grew so much as a passer because he lost the mobility that he had at Indiana. But it is hard to work without what he had. I think if he had the mobility that he did 3 years ago, you know, prior to the knee injuries, as well as the passer he is today, I think I would probably take him above Jaden Daniels. But unfortunately, that's not the reality that we're in. Because I don't think he would need to be a great runner to be a super, you know, to pass Jaden Daniels, just a serviceable runner, which he was. I do think he was at Indiana. He just isn't anymore. And it doesn't seem
all
to
we would ask me to. Just Justin Herbert level. I don't think he has Justin Herbert level running.
Right. I you made a great point earlier. I think, can you get that 3rd and 8 first down a couple times a game, or even maybe not even every game, but, you know, a good handful of times a season? And I think he went from that to not that. And that's where my concerns lie with him. I think he is a fantastic passer. And in my passing specific grades broken down, I have him as a better passer than Jaden Daniels, for what it's worth. It's just between the medical and between that and the mobility that the gap is kind of made. I do think he's the better passer, for what it's worth.
Chase, let me ask you this from this angle. Michael Penix right now, if you believe the majority of the mock drafts, he's going somewhere in that late first, maybe early second round, which could mean he winds up on a team with a better situation. maybe the Seattle Seahawks, for instance, is the one I've been kind of plucking out myself. His offensive coordinator is already there. There's a lot of good weapons there. What would that do to your fantasy expectations if that were to happen?
Yeah, I mean, if he goes to a better situation and he has to sit for a year or two, I mean, oh, hell yeah, fire it up, because I think the dude is ready now compared to a lot of the guys in this draft. Michael Penix, when I watched film for all these guys, of the eight guys I deem relevant to the conversation here, Michael Penix was literally the only one where I wished I could have watched him more. I wish I had watched him more in the moment as he played for Washington here these last 2 years. It's fun to watch him play football when he's on his game. He is a wonderful passer. The dude can play the foosball. He's great at looking off coverage. He's got a quick release. He's got big hands. He sets and he resets his hips really quickly. My big note, I've got it on all caps here. It says, please, Jesus, stay healthy. Because if he can, he is a great passer of the football. And yes, the game has moved towards more mobile quarterbacks and guys that can run and guys that can move. He can move within the pocket. He's not overly mobile. He's not going to be a great runner. His knees won't allow that. I don't think that he was necessarily going to be a great runner before the knees blew out three times. But if he can go somewhere with a system that wants him to play within that style in the pocket there, I think he really could do some damage in this league. And I think he's one of the more NFL ready quarterbacks from the standpoint of the game that he plays. Honestly, I'd like to see him. I would like to see him in a place like maybe Denver. Denver needs a quarterback. Denver needs a quarterback, and they don't necessarily need one that's going to run all over the place. Sean Payton in his past, he's looking for that Drew Brees type. Drew Brees wasn't all that mobile either. Drew Brees ran for 100 yards in a season exactly one time in his entire career, and it was year two in San Diego. He had 130 yards rushing year two. You know, I mean, to play what Sean Payton would like to do. Now, I'm not equating Michael Penix with Drew Brees, so everybody back off of that shit right now. But I'm saying, in a system like this, like that, in a place like that, where he can come along and where he can play within that kind of a system, I think Michael Penix could really tear it up in this league. I don't necessarily disagree with you, Dan. I think he is worthy of that top three consideration. Honestly, I think the game that he and Drake may play are great for this league. I hope that they get a chance to come into the league and ease into a starting position, and they're not just thrown to the wolves right away.
All right, Chris, you've been very patient, man. Let it rip.
All right, so I just want to clarify one thing. This isn't talking about Tom Brady in the pocket. You guys are acting like Michael Penix can't move. They can't do anything. He rushed for 31 yards on three carries versus Texas, one of the best games I've seen in the entire season.
That Texas game was beautiful.
Okay, really good tackles. Yes, he has good receivers. How many of those receivers is going in the top in the first round? Let's just ask that question real quick.
So one.
Where's McMillan going? Yeah. Where's the other guy going? How are they going the same high as his neighbors and Thomas? So I think the thing that I'm trying to point out is that he had good talent. He has hopefully NFL talent receivers around him in the NFL, so that would help. New England, of course.
New England.
I also think you have a guy who, when we look at it, Dan, everybody keeps talking about mobility, but has one of the lowest sack percentages, I believe, per drop back, and drop back more than any of the other quarterbacks in this draft did by far. Has a good player on the offensive line, not necessarily a good offensive line in general for Washington. And I think overall, for a guy that we keep pointing out all the flaws and all the things he can't do or can do, I see a guy that compares to the best free agent signing this offseason, which was Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins doesn't run around, doesn't make a lot of things happen, but yet made a lot of money. People are really excited about watching Kirk Cousins go to Atlanta because he can get the weapons, the ball. So I think that kind of matters in the NFL. We watched Brock Purdy have success. He's running around sometimes, but most of the success comes from being able to attack the intermediate part of the field, which Michael Penix thrives on. We watched C.J. Stroud win Rookie of the Year and had one of the most historic rookie years we've ever seen, attacking the field in the middle, attacking down the field, being aggressive. Wasn't running around. I don't remember a lot of games where I was like, oh, my God, did you see C.J. Stroud break it down and run 50 yards or 75 yard touchdowns. He ran when he needed to. He scrambled around, but most of the time he's trying to make plays down the field. Michael Penix does all those things. He showed you in college for 2 years he could do all those things. I just think this is a situation where we keep trying to find a flaw in a guy because, well, he's older. He got injury prone. Hasn't been hurt in 2 years. Has been very consistent, like I said, for this Washington team. Doesn't get sacked a lot, so doesn't need necessarily run around a lot. And all those things translate quite well to the pros in my book. So, and the best spot for him, I would like to see the Minnesota Vikings because he would tear it up there.
Yeah, totally 100%, 1,000%.
I want him nowhere near Minnesota.
Well, as a Packers fan?
Stay the hell away. I hope they draft a draft a Sebastian Janikowski in the first round. Stay the hell away from Michael Penix.
All right, John. You mentioned you've been a Michigan fan. We got to talk a little J.J. McCarthy. A lot of people, they're viewing him as the fourth best quarterback. I saw a mock draft today that had him going number four overall in the draft with the idea that the Arizona Cardinals trade out of their pick. Chris points number two. Yeah, I've seen some mock drafts with number two as well. Are you on the board with this idea that J.J. McCarthy is a franchise quarterback or not?
Oh, I definitely think he's a franchise quarterback. I have a first round grade. I think it would be perfect to drop into Denver, Minnesota for the young man. Yes. I do think he needs a 1 year timeout to learn the game. He's only, I think he's 20 years old still on the day of the draft, which I think he's 21. He turns 21 either before the season starts or somewhere in the season rather quickly. He is six. What do we got him? 6'2", 219. He looks very thin, but that's what he came out with. So I'm going to, you know, he's at least within that weight range. His advanced metrics, and I know people want to look at the volume stats because that's easier. But when you look at the advanced metrics and some of the efficiency numbers of J.J. McCarthy, they're silly. His passing efficiency is 160.5. That is, he's better than Drake May. He's better than Jaden Daniels. He's better than Bo Nix. And he's better than the aforementioned Michael Penix. His touchdown interception ratio, now it might not be as lofty as Caleb Williams, but 49-11 in a Michigan system by Harbaugh with Roman Wilson as his top receiver in the last 2 years. In a dominant running game, 49-11 is pretty meaty, man. That is efficiency. 67.6 completion percentage. I don't think people realize this. His yards per attempt, 8.7. Just to give you an idea, Daniels, 8.9. And he had Brian Thomas and Malik Nabers. Bo Nix, 7.9. We'll talk about that in a second. Michael Penix, 8.2. You really talk about lack of receivers. I mean, let's say it again. Roman Wilson was his number one guy. 8.7 is silly. He didn't have to throw the ball in the fourth quarter. Michigan was destroying people, literally destroying people.
Yep.
And this is somewhat biased and subjective, but you look at the stats, third down. It seemed like, as a Michigan fan, I've probably seen him play 22 times in the last 2 years. My subjective analysis is he always made every goddamn big play. Third and nine, J.J. McCarthy made the play. Then you look at, like, the third down statistics of him passing the ball, and they're silly. Like, they're silly good. So what you have to do, project him. That's the hard part, and I get it. Because we want to see it on film and we want to see the numbers. But what can this young man do when he's 23 years of age? If he's 220, 6'2", he has a rocket of an arm. He has athletic ability. He gets a lot of first downs. 632 yards, 9% rushing equity. And I'll say this, he never got a cheap rushing yard. Harbaugh does not design bootlegs for the quarterbacks. They don't design like sprints up the middle for the quarterbacks. That 632 yards is literally him making a play on third and 10 and him getting the first down. He is really, this might seem sack. This might seem crazy. I think he's more athletic than Drake May. I really do. What could he be athletically with some coaching? Now you're going to think I'm crazy for this, and that's okay. I think his ceiling is John Elway. If everything comes together, he is John Elway. And here's what I see on with the arm strength.
That's a bold statement.
His ability to throw the ball 20 yards down the field is as good as anyone I've seen. Two, he throws the ball at times 30 yards across two hash marks. What I mean by that is he rolls right, sits in the pocket or scrambles right, and he'll throw the ball to the left 20 yards downfield on the other side of the hash mark, and it's a goddamn bullet. The only player I've ever seen that in the NFL do that on a consistent basis is John Elway. Check out the AFC Championship games against Cleveland. He makes some throws that are just absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah.
J.J. McCarthy. Now, I'm not saying that's likely. That's a 10% ceiling outcome. Now, let's be honest. His floor could be tremendously high. He's in a run-based system. He has a wonderful defense. And he wasn't asked to win a lot of games on his own. He's never been in that Elway pressure cooker, right? We know the NFL. We don't see that. That's a projection. Can he come through down by 10, 8 minutes left in a game, and he's got to throw every down? Can McCarthy do that? I think there's the potential to do it, but we have not seen it. So there's a wide range of outcomes for this young man. I think he really needs to sit for a year.
Yes.
I mean, but I'll say this. Minnesota isn't an awful landing spot, because I'll tell you something.
Would be perfect.
Anyone, Randy Moss, there's my old man in there. When Justin Jefferson throws the ball up, his hand up in the air and says, I'm open, JJ, just get me the ball. Like if you're going to talk about landing spot on turf in a dome, that's a pretty nice spot to land in with Minnesota and a good offense and a good coach.
Ooh. Big praise coming to JJ McCarthy from the Michigan fan, and we would expect no less.
It's a Michigan fan speaking, so that's fair.
Adam, follow that up with your analysis. Great breakdown, John.
I like him. I don't know that I'm quite Elway. I kid, but I do like him a lot, and the arm was something that impressed me quite a bit. I gotta say, like, there's more juice to squeeze out of that as well, because a lot of the times, to me, I think he's got okay footwork, but what drew me, like, as almost a positive just because of how young he was. If he was 2 years older doing the same thing, it'd be a negative. But it really feels like he uses the arm and the torso, but he's not getting the legs involved as much as he potentially could. And what I see is that when he's off platform, when he's running around, you've lost nothing, like not even a little bit from the arm. Yep. And I think that's both, again, a positive and a negative. And it's because he's not using the leg when he's in the pocket. So I think if he can activate the lower body as well as a part of his throwing motion when he is standing in a clean pocket, then there's more arm that we can exploit here. So I do think he has a really good arm. He's a weird one. The pocket presence could be a lot better. He's, to me, I film grade was on the lower end of this class in that regard. But kind of to your point, I have to agree with you as far as both big moments and the difficult plays, like the plays that you don't expect your quarterback to make, that you're like, all right, like, you have to pat someone on the back for making that play. Like, he was there time and time again making the difficult play. Now, the routine stuff, I think, we can probably clean up a little bit. And that's what's so weird to me with him being a Harbaugh quarterback. You normally think like the run first offense, the super conservative offense, just going to have the quarterback that comes in, does the easy stuff, gets out. And that wasn't really him. He had the volume of someone that did that, and he had the completion percentage of someone that did that. But he was kind of erring towards the more difficult throws more than I would have expected. So I'm impressed with him. I have him below Penix, but barely. I do see him in that kind of that late first to early second kind of range. And if he goes somewhere with a good supporting cast, and I agree with you, I hope that he's able to sit a year, maybe two, but I think that there's talent here. I think he can be a really good quarterback. I think you're kind of looking at someone in the, if you were to average out the outcomes, I kind of see in the Carr to Baker Mayfield range, Baker especially, because I think he was similar and that you never quite got the drop off in arm talent when he moved around. Now, he was never able to activate kind of that extra juice, but he came into the league a lot older than McCarthy did. So I think that there's a better shot for him to kind of see the upside that Baker didn't. But I like him. I'd slightly lean Penix, but I have them in the same tier.
Chase, where do you have J.J. McCarthy ranked amongst the top six quarterbacks?
I have him ranked below Penix, as Adam calls him. I love that. J.J. McCarthy, no, listen, here's, as John, I get that you love your dude, okay? Listen, I'm not going to stand here and tell you that Tanner Mordecai has Troy Aikman upside as a sleeper in this draft or anything like that. But all right, I'm a Wisconsin guy, but I'm not that much of a flippant Wisconsin guy. The only quarterback we ever had was Russell Wilson. But I really liked J.J. McCarthy when I watched him play. He wasn't asked to do as much as some of these other quarterbacks were in terms of the complicatedness of the offense and that. But I love how calm he is. You said he was a leader of men, John, and I agree with that. I think that those guys played for him and not just with him. Let me take you back to 2020. The nation is ravaged by COVID. Toilet paper is nowhere to be seen. Times are tough all over the place, but especially in Michigan because the Badgers have just blown the shit out of the Wolverines, 49-11, okay? A Michigan commit, a recruit, who is committed to the program, named J.J. McCarthy, takes to Twitter with this like prophetic, like Pollyanna-ish tweet that says, "I want all Michigan fans to do this. Take three deep breaths and have faith. Faith that every single coach, player, employee in that building is doing everything they possibly can to be great." The kid sent that out as an 18-year-old commit to that program, and 3 years and 3 months later, he leads them to the national title. That kid is everything you want in the leader of your organization, and he's everything you want in the face of your organization. I was surprised. The more I watched tape on him, the more I liked him. He is a gamer. He's a winner. I think he's calm. In the moment, I think that he can bring that energy down. Like, hey guys, let's just play our game. Let's just do what we have to do. He's got a little bit of that longer release, kind of like Drake May. But again, he's young. And if he can go somewhere, I have it in big, bold letters again, like everybody, Minnesota behind Darnold ? Would be a perfect opportunity for him. Learn from a guy in Sam Darnold, who I know is not popular among the fans in NFL, but among football people in the NFL, I think Sam Darnold enjoys a much better reputation than the rest of us give him. And Sam Darnold has proven himself to be a professional in this game because he has dealt with some situations throughout his time in this league in three different areas.
Thank you.
I'm not saying he's a great player, dude.
Whoever Minnesota wants by quarterback, they ain't playing behind Sam Darnold week one. I want to just put it out there. Right. Not going to happen.
I disagree with you, but I think that would be a great situation for him. I really think J.J. McCarthy does have something to offer in this league as a starting quarterback. I think he can learn to make all the reads. I think he needs a lot of reps. I think he needs some time. But I think if he can get that and if he gets put in the right situation, J.J. McCarthy will be a very good quarterback. I have him ranked neck and neck with Bo Nix, but I like J.J. McCarthy.
Yeah, look, Sam Darnold's going to be following those ghosts right onto the bench come preseason. Chris, go ahead, man.
All right. First of all, I think he is Sam Darnold. So let's just establish that. That's a talent I see. That's what I see with my eyes. That's the vision of Sam Darnold in college. Number two, this incredible athlete had the same amount of rushing touchdowns as Michael Penix had last year. In fact, the last 2 years combined, he had 8 touchdowns compared to 7 from Michael Penix. So he's had one more touchdown rushing than Michael Penix, who can't move at all. His incredible athlete and his incredible arm has not very many starts. I think, John, in the beginning of the show, you talked a lot about, you know, you like seeing the tape and Brock Purdy and how he's able to be out there and get all his starts and play all his games. Keep talking about J.J. McCarthy's a winner, but he's 27-1 as a starter. So he's got some games. He's been winning. But how much has he actually played a part in all those victories? 22 touchdowns this year, 22 touchdowns the previous year, 4 or 5 interceptions. You get what you get. That's not bad. But like I talked about Jaden McDaniels earlier, you know, Jaden Daniels' rookie year had 19, or freshman year had 19 touchdowns and 2 interceptions. And going into this year, Jaden Daniels wasn't in anybody's draft board. So I'm struggling with J.J. McCarthy's ascension because Michigan won. I get Michigan won, and I'm excited for Michigan fans in general. But all of a sudden, making J.J. McCarthy some kind of, you know, franchise-building quarterback, Dan, I'm completely lost on that. I don't see it. I don't see the same arm talent you guys do. I think your guy has a decent arm. I think he can struggle to draw the ball outside the numbers sometimes. I see that, John, I did see some of those throws across the field you're talking about. He has a nice crosser. He can't make that from one hash to all the way across the other hash. Where he struggles is stepping up and driving it to those outside hashes. I haven't really seen that consistently. I haven't even seen the combine. He struggled with those throws. So for me, I do have some concerns about J.J. McCarthy being a star or being some kind of franchise guy. I have a third round grade on him. I think he has some potential to be a good player. But I do see a lot of Sam Darnold, and this is where I see – I wasn't big on Sam Darnold coming out, but I see some of the same talent things where we see a guy who has players around him, is asked to do certain things, can throw in a run, as Adam alluded to. It doesn't necessarily, you know, take anything to velocity. I see some upside things for him. I just don't see necessarily a guy who I trust to be my franchise quarterback moving forward.
Yeah, Chris, I think I'm more in your ballpark when it comes to J.J. McCarthy. My player comp is somewhere between Kenny Pickett and Daniel Jones, which if you go in between, it probably is Sam Darnold, quite frankly. The point more being a guy with an above-average arm with some mobility but doesn't show all the packages consistently on the field. And you can hide a lot of inefficiencies when you have a team that's rushing 61% of the time like Michigan was doing over there. He was a complement to the offense, not the main course. And my problem with drafting a guy as a franchise quarterback when the college he came from wasn't even really asking him to be the franchise quarterback for them is where I think you're taking a hell of a leap. Where if he doesn't get to, and John, this is one thing I did appreciate what you're saying, that he needs to sit. Because a lot of people I talk to think J.J. McCarthy is one of the most NFL day ready one prospects, and that I lose my mind on that. And that's what he's going to be, by the way, if he does get drafted inside the top 5, which I hope doesn't happen for his own sake. I am not as low as Chris as far as the ground grade goes. I have him as a second round grade because I think this is somebody who does have the ability at least to be an average starter, and therefore you're a second round grade at minimum as a quarterback from that standpoint. But this is a guy who is not asked to do a lot, and a guy who wasn't asked to do a lot and still had trouble in the pressure department. It wasn't quite the 20% threshold that we're looking for guys, but I think it was like 17 in 2023, just below that 20% mark. So when you're talking about J.J. McCarthy, who has average numbers in time to throw, average numbers in the deep yard passing attempts. Another guy who I'm not buying is actually 219. I saw a thin guy on frame. Yeah. I see a college who listed him at 203. Again, going back to colleges don't list you 20 pounds lighter than what you actually are, in my opinion, when you're playing. So I don't buy some of those things. And Jim Harbaugh, let's be honest. Who is Jim Harbaugh developed as a quarterback? Andrew Luck. That's it. That's the only one. Everything outside of that, Alex Smith went away, did better with Andy Reid. This ultimately was what he was. Colin Kaepernick disappeared the second he left San Francisco. Some of that could be the outside reasons, but never really developed to that great of a quarterback to begin with. He's been in college for a long time. Outside of Andrew Luck, I haven't really seen anybody at Michigan or Stanford be all anything in the NFL. And Andrew Luck was a freak of nature. And I think that's a lot more to do with it than anything else. So I think McCarthy, he does that accurate pass 10 to 15 yards over the middle of the field. He has some mobility. Chris, to your point, I watched a guy consistently struggle with his ball placement and velocity, which I attribute to whether you have elite arm strength outside the hashes on a consistent basis. And I also saw a guy who got latched on to one read. He was not going through his progressions very quickly throughout this season, and he wasn't asked to do that either. I think we have a long development track for a guy like a J.J. McCarthy. So when you're talking to me about him being in the first round, and we're talking about from a fantasy standpoint assets, I don't see the special quality that makes him ever in the quarterback one top 12 conversation. So that's kind of why I see that. John, I'll let you rebuttal, and then we got to get Bo Nix in here real quick before we close up the show.
No, I look, there's definitely a wide range of outcomes for J.J. McCarthy. I'm aware of that. And he could be a bust, but I have technically, if you want to know, I have a second round grade. I only have three first round grades, but the NFL elevates the quarterback position. So we know there's at least what, five desperate teams for a starting quarterback right now. So yeah. I think part of the conversation is the desperation. In a perfect scenario, he would go like in the second round to maybe like mid second round semi playoff team and be able to grow. But that's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. So I do see the floor. And I see that you have to do some projections. So I see the wide range of outcomes. I just tend to talk about the ceiling. That's my personality. So I tend to say what can be the ceiling of a player. And I will admit, I'm probably a little, when I play Dynasty, I play for ceiling. So that tends to be. Now, ironically, I'll pluck a block, and I got Brock Purdy on all three of my Dynasty teams. And it's not because I drafted him. He was sitting on the waiver wire. And grabbing, I'm sorry, once a quarterback's on the waiver wire, I'm just going to take him. And I remember, like, people were just looking at him. I'm like, you got to take a starting quarterback. You never know. So, you know, but I do look for ceiling. So that's what I'm focused on with McCarthy.
Yeah, absolutely. Just want to let you rebuttal. And John, don't ever change. We love your positive personality. All right, so let's talk about Bo Nix. Bo Nix compared to the rest of these quarterbacks, frankly. I'll just go real quick on him. This dude, you want to talk about guys who've been in college forever, and maybe that's a good thing, but that has been Bo Nix. He's been in college forever. And in his case, I don't think it's a – oh, you're in college forever, so you have all this great experience. No, I think you're in college forever because you're never good enough to actually enter the NFL draft, and that's why you've been in college forever. He's been in Auburn. He's been in Oregon. Two very friendly quarterback systems who really outside of Justin Herbert and Auburn had Cam. I don't know what other pros that they've provided that have actually gone off without hitches in their own right. Bo Nix is the guy who I have as a third round great. I think he could be a very good backup quarterback. This is not somebody I project out to be a very good starter. He doesn't get down the field. 6.8 dot last year was 167th. He's not squeezing in the tight windows. 4.1% big time rates. Yes, he takes care of the football. Number one in screen yards, okay? The majority of Bo Nix's work comes behind the line of scrimmage to the 8-yard line. That is where Bo Nix operates. This is why I compare him to Alex Smith. He's not going to be running off of the tables anytime soon. So from a fantasy standpoint, not going to be my top 12. From an NFL standpoint, yawn. And that's kind of where I wound up with Bo Nix. But, John, let's get you in there.
I like the Alex Smith comparison because I think about that the same thing. How many times did we watch Alex Smith with Kansas City or with San Francisco and you kind of feel like, let the ball rip, and he just says, nah, I'm going to chuck it down to my back out of the backfield. Like, I call it the chutzpah. You know, he's the anti-chutzpah. He's like, nah, I'm not going to throw that. Nah, I don't want to throw that. I mean, Derek Carr suffers from the same thing. So I do see a little bit of that in Bo Nix. I agree with you. But there are on tape, I think, more long-distance throws than there were with Alex Smith at Utah. Because you do see some deep passes to the two wide receivers. Troy Franklin is coming out. And his adopted brother.
Johnson. Tez Johnson. Yeah. Tez Johnson.
That's it, Tez. Yeah. So there are some deep passes, at least on the film. 61 career starts, Dan. He's going to get a shot in the NFL. And I was joking with someone. Tommy DeVito got a big shot in the NFL. I mean, has anyone ever saw Tommy DeVito at Syracuse? I was shocked that he was on a roster. I was like, I remember when they went down, they're like, they're bringing in Tommy. I'm like, is this the Tommy DeVito I saw at Syracuse? Like, what is going on here? So Bo Nix will get a shot. I believe Bo Nix is scheme dependent. Very much. If you are putting him into an intermediate or vertical passing game where he's got to sit in the pocket and make these long reads and be patient, you're doing it wrong. You drafted the wrong guy. I think you remember when Kubiak was with the Houston Texans?
Yes.
And he had who was that? Matt Schaub.
Yeah.
Schaub.
I think Bo Nix in a Kubiak system where he uses his legs, and what I mean not by running, I mean moving out of the pocket, yep, rolling out, throwing a lot of those Kubiak quick. Remember how the Broncos used to use Demaryius Thomas on that quick screen and he would take it 40 yards downfield? But you really need the structure and offense to Bo Nix strengths, which what that also means, you have to get some parts around him that can make plays, like Demaryius Thomas, Andre Johnson, right? Andre Johnson could bail out Matt Schaub. If he's in that scenario, I think he can have a Derek Carr, Andy Dalton type of career. He might start 75 to 90 games. You know, he might sneak you into the playoffs. He looks like a quarterback above 500. You know, if he has 90 starts, he'll win 52, you know, and that would, what, give you 38 losses. Maybe that's even too good. Maybe 48 wins and 42 losses. He will play in the NFL, but it's so scheme dependent. I really have to see his landing spot. I have him at number 5 because I do think there's potential here in the right spot. And, you know, it's funny you talked about, do you remember his first game? Because I can't believe I still remember it. He played against Oregon when he was at Auburn on a Friday or Saturday night. Remember, he was a 5-star prospect coming out of the state of Alabama, and he was a big Cam Newton fan. And they were showing pictures. He was at the national championship game when Auburn won it with Cam Newton. And they had all these pictures of little Bo Nix in the stands cheering on Cam Newton. And then he went to Auburn, right? His dream school. I do think before you judge Nick completely, you should watch some film with Auburn, because I think he learned a lot. That was some bad Auburn teams he was on. I mean, Auburn hit, I think, rock bottom with Bo Nix. And I'll say this, that can be a learning experience for a quarterback. So he does end up making a wise decision moving with Dan Lanning up to Oregon, and the system just fits him better. You're right, Dan, he's a very old man. I mean, 61 starts. I think he's 23. Is he going? And he's going to be 24 by the time.
24 soon, yeah.
Soon, yeah. So he is older. But I have a second round grade perfectly. Before the Steelers upgraded, I was thinking second round Pittsburgh might not be a bad option for a Bo Nix, because he at least gets good coaching in a good system with a good organization. I don't know now. I hear people say Denver wants him. I'm not sure that's going to be interesting if they take him there. I think that's a reach. But if they got him in the second round, maybe. You know, I do have a second round grade. I think he'll be better and less pressure if he lands in the second round.
Problem with that is Denver doesn't have a second rounder, so they have to wait till the third. So they, yeah, but and I don't know. I don't know that Peyton has the patience to put up with Bo Nix.
The patience? Well, I disagree with that. I think Bo Nix would be the perfect Peyton quarterback, because all he wants is a guy who can think it, dunk it down to the field, and just play within the system.
From that standpoint, yeah, but he's also. getting older and he needs to freaking win and he needs to do now.
Sean Payton don't know how to develop anybody. He'll take the older quarterback all day. I think the Sean Payton thing would fit. I just don't think he's going to be the landing spot because I don't think they have the right draft capital in the right spot to make it happen.
Yeah, they're not taking him at 12 or wherever the hell they are.
I could hope not, but I never know at the NFL when it comes to these quarterbacks, and that's kind of the point why we're having this conversation. Adam, Bo Nix, you know, this is a guy just – where do you rank him at when it comes to these other quarterbacks? What is his potential, his upside and fantasy wise when it comes to these other six quarterbacks?
I'm not particularly high on Bo Nix. I think starter is in his range of outcomes is from an NFL standpoint. For me personally, I struggle to see a world where he would be a top 24 dynasty quarterback. So from my perspective, I don't care about him for fantasy. Like, I think he's going to be rosterable because he will play NFL snaps. I will certainly agree with that. Bo Nix is going to get a shot, and he might hold on to a starting job for longer than, there's been plenty of Davis Mills and Mike Glennons and guys who have hung on to starting jobs for longer than they ever deserved. And I think he's better than those guys, to be clear. So I do think NFL starter for a period of years is in his range of outcomes. But from a fantasy perspective, if he gets the starting job and everything goes right, then the best way to use him, kind of as we're talking about, hey, we're going to be a conservative offense. We're going to get you into third and three, and you're going to throw the ball, and you're going to complete the pass, and it's going to work out. He'll probably have great efficiency metrics, but I don't think he's going to throw a lot of touchdowns. I don't think he's going to run a lot. I know he was a little bit mobile at Auburn. I don't think any of us see him. I think he's more of in that tier of guys who are college mobile but not pro mobile. We talk about the third down thing. I think he's that mobile, but you're not building an offense around his legs by any stretch of the imagination. I think he does, the things in structure really well. I thought the opposite about him as I did when I talked earlier about Caleb Williams, where you're putting your guys in positions to get good runs after the catch. I think he hits his short guys. I don't think he puts them in great positions to keep going. I think he makes them stop. I think he makes them, turn around, come up here, do all sorts of things to catch the ball. They're all catchable passes. His underneath stuff's catchable. But not in the best position to keep going. Yeah, exactly.
But that's ball placement.
Right.
Like Joe Montana was the master of ball placement.
Yeah.
Bo Nix is not the master.
He's hitting his targets, but the ball placement is not great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So from a fantasy perspective and even from an NFL perspective, maybe this is a hot take, maybe it's not. I'm taking the Spencer Rattler gamble 100 times out of 100 before I talk about Bo Nix personally. I'd rather roll the dice and at least I can
bold statement.
I can hit refresh and try again later the next year if it doesn't work out, which it probably won't. But I'd rather do that than be in mediocrity for the rest of my life, because that's what, to me, Bo Nix is. I don't think he's ever winning you anything. He's probably not going to lose you anything. He's never winning you anything. Rattler's either going to work out or he's going to crash and burn, and then you try again.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing we could take out of this is that the ever optimist ceiling looking John Lobb said it's Andy Dalton for his ceiling. I think it kind of wraps it up.
He brought up Matt Schaub too. Listen.
Oh, okay. My bad.
And if Bo Nix plays 16 years in the league and has a 3 or 4 year run as a starting quarterback, and then that'd be wildly successful.
Not on my fantasy team, though. Not on my fantasy. Chase, Chris, real quickly, you want to add something about Bo Nix?
Well, no, I think I like him a little bit better than you guys. I like his mechanics. I like his body control there. He's got a lot of room to improve. And again, he was not asked to do a whole lot there. You brought up the short passes. He was the captain of throwing behind the line of scrimmage. But if that's what he's being asked to do, it's what he's been asked to do. We can debate whether he was asked to do that because that's all he could do or because that's just what the freaking offense is. But either way, he had decent results. I think he's, again, like some of these other guys we've talked about, he needs to come in and sit for a while. He needs to learn for a while. He is not NFL ready to step in day one like some of these other guys, like I think Penix is, like I think Williams is, Daniels is, maybe even May. I think he can have a career in this league because I I do like some of the things that he offers. I, like I said, I think he's got decent mechanics. I think that he's accurate enough. I think he's a decent runner, but yeah, I mean, he's fifth or sixth on everybody's boards for a reason.
Chris, quick.
So my ceiling for him is Mitchell Trubisky or Daniel Jones. I think this is looking at a guy that if you're going to capitalize on early, because he might have the draft capital invested in him. So he's going to play. He'll have that one good year. John talked about, he'll throw, you know, in today's NFL, we watched people like Jeff Browning last year have a good season. Gardner Minshew got a job this offseason. You watch a lot of guys who don't, you know, noodle arm quarterbacks in a sense, but they get the ball where they're supposed to. They listen to the coaching staff. They throw a bunch of screens. And that's, you know, a guy that I play for some certain systems. But I think inevitably teams will take that away, especially his first read. They'll start crunching them. Like we saw Mitchell Trubisky. We saw, you know, same thing with Daniel Jones. These are guys, once you start taking away the things they're used to do, throwing 4-yard passes, you know, to the middle, then they don't really have the athletic ability to continue to kind of, you know, ride it out with that. So Bo Nix reminds me a lot of those guys. Bo Nix is not a guy that I have very high on at all, Dan. I think, you know, we all know that.
Yeah. Yep. I think that's a good point to wrap it up about Bo Nix. So here's what I want. Rapid fire. Don't give me why. Just give me a name. Who is your guy's quarterback to look out for outside of this top six, John? Go.
Spencer Rattler, South Carolina. I said Oklahoma. South Carolina, Spencer Rattler.
Adam?
I already said I'd rather have Rattler than Bo Nix, so I'll keep it there.
Chase?
Rattler of Oklahoma and South Carolina, yeah.
We got three Rattlers, Chris?
I'm not excited by any of them, but I'm going Sam Hartman for guy a lot of starts.
Okay, and I'm going to say Joe Milton, not for a quarterback reasons. I'm hoping he goes a Logan Thomas route down at some point in his career. All right, that does it for today's show. I hope you guys all enjoyed it. John, what do you got coming out? Where can we check you out, man?
At first, thanks for having me on, gentlemen. I had a blast tonight. We have our video profile series is on YouTube on the Rookie Big Board channel. Actually, this week, we're coming out with our Bo Nix and Michael Penix quarterback shows. We've done the other four, so you can check them out right now. And all my written work this year for the first time is on playerprofiler.com. I've been 10 years with football diehards, but I joined a new team this year. So you can check out my quarterback model, my rankings, and I do prospect resume as well as film breakdown of each prospect.
Oh, John, love it. Love your work. Everyone needs to go check you out, especially on social media. And just thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show. Rest of us, you'll be able to find us on social media at OP Domination FF. You can follow Chase and Adam there as myself. Our tags are all in the screens right now. Make sure you come back next week at 9:30 Wednesday. We'll be talking about the running backs next week as we continue on our Dynasty Series to our big draft show in Charlotte for the first three rounds late April. Can't wait for that. Guys, make sure you check out our YouTube channel and download your favorite podcast app. We'll see you soon.